There is a disinformation program, literally, for everyone, no matter who you are and what your interests are, what your beliefs are, which way you're focusing. There is a website set up just for you to take you in and to vector your thinking and your attention into the way that they want you to think.
You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
We pick up in this podcast where we left off in our last, discussing what's taken place on our planet in the last year. It's worse than you think. Well, the next two topics we wanted to look at were Iran and Venezuela in Latin America. In some ways, these are two topics that we will probably be discussing quite a bit next year when we look back on the coming year, because these are crises in the brewing. We've certainly seen the rhetoric stepped up against Iran in the last year, and it is clear that the United States wants to move somehow against Iran. How quickly they'll be able to do it may depend a bit on how bogged down they continue to be in Iraq. So the timetable on that, I would think, is still up in the air. But it is quite clear that they want to do something. And the Chavez government in Venezuela is also a major irritant to Bush, because Chavez is becoming a focal point for dissent against American domination of Latin America. And with the elections in the last year that have brought new governments to Bolivia, to Argentina, to Chile, and with the Mexican election today, although at the last figures that I saw showed that the conservative leader was still ahead.
Amid loud claims of corruption and vote rigging.
Of course.
We had recently on the page that the conservative guy who seems to be winning the Mexican election just happens to be a good buddy of Mexico's Vicente Fox, and they both also happen to be kind of buddies with the Bush administration, and Calderon, I think, is his name, the conservative, and he also happens to be a Harvard-trained economist and lawyer. Mm-hmm. And Washington was
just the kind of psychopath you want up at the top.
Yeah, and it's just the kind of psychopath that Washington was really hoping would win the election. And, you know, strangely enough, there's this closely contested election, just like in the U.S. in 2000, 2004, and here's this guy. He looks like he's going to win, and Washington's perfectly happy.
It's not a matter of hoping. I think they were pretty sure that this guy would swing it in some way. But, I mean, Mexico has been, for at least for the term of Fox, the outgoing president, has been essentially a client state, pretty much controlled, or at least in the pocket of the Bush administration. And actually, Greg Palast has written a few articles recently. Greg Palast is an interesting guy. I don't want to say too much about him, but he does some good work on certain things, and he has done a good bit of research on the Mexico elections, and he is suggesting, with a lot of sources and a lot of evidence, that the Mexico election was essentially Floridized, can I say Floridized?
Ohioized?
Yeah, by the same people who stole the American elections in 2000, 2004, in the same kind of scurrilous ways.
One last thing about Venezuela and Chavez. We had a couple weeks ago a video. It was a link. It was, I believe, an editorial. And we'll put it again on this week's podcast Signs page. But it's a link to a very interesting video that was made by an independent filmmaker who happened to be present in Venezuela during the
two
coup.
Irish guys.
Two Irish guys, in fact, not related to our very own Joe Quinn.
To Ignatius O'Reilly, I understand.
Yeah. but this is basically a must-watch video if you want to understand what's going on between Chavez and the Bush government, because it very nicely illustrates that the coup that tried to dethrone Chavez was very probably a CIA-sponsored coup attempt. And I mean, it's a very, very interesting video, and you will never look at the whole anti-Venezuela, anti-Chavez thing again after watching this video. So we'll definitely repost the link.
Yeah, suffice to say that when Chavez was taken away by a certain group of certain members of the military to an island to be taken out of the country, a plane arrived to take him away. And guess what? It was an American plane.
No.
Yeah, so...
international aid. It's a wonderful thing.
Chavez's major crime, basically, is using the Venezuela's oil wealth to alleviate the suffering of 80% of the population who are living in poverty and have been living in poverty due to the fact that major American and international oil companies have been essentially stealing all of the profits from Venezuela's oil due to contracts signed with previous pro-Bush regimes in Venezuela, and he kind of nullified those, or annulled those, and this is America's problem with Chavez. He wants to feed the poor people, and that
give them health care, give them education.
Well, that and that, as we know, is just
it's not allowed.
Well, it's anti-American.
It's anti-American. That's right. Now, speaking of anti-American, dear Auntie and Uncle American, Uncle Sam has had a rough year. Uncle Sam has had a number of rough years since 9/11, and the revelations that have come out in the last year include Bush's spying on American citizens. He tries to tell us that he's only doing it against suspected Al-Qaeda operatives. But anyone with two firing neurons knows that that's not the case. When telephone records of ordinary Americans are collected by the National Security Agency, it's not Al-Qaeda operatives that they're going after. The more plausible explanation for this is that the Bush Reich has been collecting information on potential opponents in order to blackmail them to shut them up. And if you look at what's going on, or more particularly what's not going on in terms of any organized political opposition to the Bush administration in Congress, you can see the direct results. You can very well think that politicians, journalists, media people, anyone who's not actively supporting Bush out of a sharing of the psychopathic ideals, if we can call them that, is being blackmailed into silence, threatened into silence, and that the information to permit them to do this has been collected through these illegal wiretaps, illegal spying.
Yeah, we've had a lot of stuff over the past year come out about the goings-on in the nether regions of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and its associated agencies. We've had a lot of stuff about from intelligence agencies in the U.S. Where they have commented on stuff in the past about the Iraq War, about Saddam, the claims about Saddam's WMDs, his claims about Saddam's connections with Al Qaeda. All of these in the past year have been outed as lies. We also had more stuff on the Niger Gate scandal, where which was the claim that Saddam was procuring enriched uranium from Niger. All of these things were completely fabricated. All of them lies, and all of this stuff has come out in a kind of drip fed to the media over the past year, exposing the fact that basically everything that Bush has said, the Bush government has said, the neocons have said since 9/11 have been lies. All of the stuff that they've said in terms of pushing the cause for war and the war on terror, all of it has been lies. And the amazing thing, again, like we've said in the past and which we keep on repeating, is that this stuff is in the media. This stuff is being revealed to the population, and there seems to be no reaction. And it seems to be because of the way that it's presented. I don't think the word lie has been used by any mainstream news source when talking about the fact that the Bush government lied.
It's not polite to accuse the President of the United States of lying.
I know. So they use all of these kind of terms.
Orwellian,
like, you know, he misconstrued.
Paramoralisms.
Yeah, he misconstrued, or he distorted, or he was just plain stupid about it, you know, because he's not that intelligent. And this seems to be the problem, in that people aren't getting the shock from these things. It's being watered down by the mainstream press.
And I think maybe, you know, I had mentioned earlier that I thought maybe, you know, Bush was losing his grip on America. And there's a video, it was from the Lou Dobbs show, and it was about this this new act that was passed where basically the U.S. government, it was sort of like a trade pact. And
Canada and Mexico.
Right. And the gist of it was that what Lou Dobbs got all fired up about, and what he was obviously trying to get the American people all fired up about, was the fact that U.S. soldiers could be used to go and defend Mexico's southern border. Oh, my God. Now, I mean, all this stuff is happening, and you have all these you know, semi-revelations, because, of course, you've been reading sites like Signs of the Times. You've known about this stuff for years. But, you know, these revelations about, you know, U.S. soldiers, you know, raping and pillaging and murdering, and the spying scandal, and, you know, basically the police state that's been developing.
Torture, extraordinary rendition, illegal detainment of people in secret prisons around the world.
Yeah, I mean, all this stuff is going on. And what Lou Dobbs gets fired up about is, oh, my God, U.S. troops could be sent into Mexico to defend their southern border. So, you know, it almost seems like, you know, all these things, you know, if there is going to be some kind of change, and if Bush is in fact losing his grip, then he's not losing it in such a way that, you know, that the American people are actually sort of fighting the police state, or, you know, it's almost like America is being led possibly down, you know, a slightly different path, which maybe doesn't include Bush, but, you know, all this stuff is just going to keep happening. I mean, you have, you know, the Supreme Court comes out and says, ruled against the Bush administration, and their response was, well, you know, we're going to kind of, you know, go over it and see how we can comply with it. So basically they just came out and point blank said, you know, we're going to find a way around it, and we don't care what the Supreme Court says.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, like the report from a few days ago in the LA Times was headlined, did Bush commit war crimes? Now,
well, duh.
Yeah, well, the thing is, he did. You know what I mean? This is what Scotty's talking about, where the Supreme Court kind of overruled him.
About Guantanamo Bay.
About his right to kind of deny prisoners basically any rights whatsoever. And under the Geneva, this is a clear kind of infringement of Geneva Convention, so it's essentially a war crime, given that many of the prisoners that the CIA have rendered or have taken to Guantanamo Bay or to Abu Ghraib or to Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan, all of these are war crimes, according to the Geneva Convention. But the LA Times asks the question. You know, it's like you witness someone shooting someone else in the head, and then you say, did he commit murder? You know, so there's plausible. It's almost like there's, you know, that's an example of the watering down, you know.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, so it's...
In the last year, the only one who stood up to Bush and called him out to his face was Stephen Colbert at the White House press dinner, when he was on the dais just a few feet away from Bush and rammed into him like nobody else in the United States has done.
But did it all through humor.
Did it all through humor.
That's the only way he could get away with it.
And the audience was so frightened of what he was doing that they kind of stood there with stunned expressions.
Yeah, I think the quote was a little too much speaking truth to power. I mean, please.
And what's it going to take? We saw in the last year Bush's absolute contempt for ordinary Americans in the way the Katrina disaster was handled.
Yeah, good job, Brownie.
I mean, there are still areas of New Orleans that are, you know, like a war zone. And we had another recent article on the page where a reporter went in and nothing has been done in vast parts of the areas that were hit.
Yeah, that says it all about what he thinks about American people. But as long as, you know, there's still a lot of people who have their SUVs and can still fill them up, albeit at a lot higher price, They're not going to care until it really hits them where it hurts. So all of it's been lies from the Bush administration in the past year, and right up until recently, when in terms of the war on terror, the very clear fabrication of terrorism by the US government and the FBI, with this case of the Miami 7, where they it's quite comical, actually. The FBI identified a group called the Sea of David, which was a Christian, essentially a Christian type, Christian Jewish group.
With overtones of voodoo or something?
Yeah, very little of anything Islamic about them. But they were obviously, on an interview I watched with one of the guys who was apparently their spokesman, and he was the guy who could actually express himself the best. He came across as a gibbering idiot, you know. He could hardly string a coherent sentence together, and this was their spokesman. He was a member of this Miami 7 group that the FBI had identified as a potential terrorist threat, but it seems that they weren't a terrorist threat until they were kind of made into a terrorist threat by the FBI. Because the FBI agent, posing as an Al-Qaeda operative, said to them, kind of basically sidled up to them, they were all living in a warehouse, eating rats or something. And he sidled up to them and said, "Hey, I'm from Al-Qaeda, do you want to join? Do you want to blow up some stuff, don't you?" And these guys were so stupid that they were like, "Yeah, maybe, whatever, what do you mean?" And the guy says, "Hey, I'll give you 50 grand. I'll give you 50 grand if you, you know, and I'll give you some, you know, and
some toys to play with."
Toys to play with. And they're like, "Hey, cool." They're probably thinking, "Yeah, let's get the money and run," you know. So the FBI agent kind of basically swore them into Al-Qaeda, gave them an oath, and they were like, "Cool, sure." And he suggested to them that they wanted to blow up some government buildings, and also that they might consider blowing up the Sears Tower, perhaps. He was like, "You know, would you guys maybe want to do that?" And they were like, "Maybe. Do you know where the Sears Tower is?" And one of them knew where it was. One of them had actually been to Chicago. So this was, for the FBI and the U.S. government, this was clear evidence of an Al-Qaeda terror threat
in
the U.S.
Well, there was a wonderful clip of Alberto Gonzalez making the announcement, and the journalists were asking him, "And do you have any evidence?" And he kind of turns around and looks at the people behind him. And
yeah, the military guy, and the guy was like, "Evidence?" The answer is that. No.
So it is such a joke.
Yeah,
it is such a joke.
And this is the one saving grace, that it is so. I mean, if there were any more professional about it, we would be concerned that, you know, we have no hope of ever doing anything about it. But the fact that they seem to care so little about making it even appear realistic is one chance we have of exposing it, but it's still amazing that it's gone on so long and no one is calling it out for what it is.
Before we move on to our next topic to basically wrap up our discussion of America, I'd just like to reiterate that while it is possible that Bush might be losing his grip on America, at the end of the day, it ain't over until the fat lady sings. And unfortunately, the fat lady has been renditioned to a prison in Morocco and is currently being interrogated and tortured as an Al-Qaeda operative, suspected Al-Qaeda operative. So the bottom line is that, you know, any change, you know, now is not the time to become, you know, smug or complacent or self-satisfied or, you know, I mean, it's, you know, now is not the time to sit back and do nothing.
Nope.
Now is the time for those people. I mean, not just in America, but everywhere, who are against, you know, Bush and his gang and everybody who's been working with him in various countries around the world, to actually say something, you know, share what you know, talk to people.
Bone up on political ponerology and understand about psychopathy in power.
Yeah, no, now is the time for action, not, you know, saying, "Oh, okay, yeah, the Supreme Court ruled against him, so, you know, we'll just, you know, we can... You know, everything will be fine. You know, he won't be in power for, you know, this is his second term. It'll be over in a couple of years." Well, you know, I mean, if he can get away with spying and he can, you know, on the American people and get away with blackmail and get away with torture and, I mean, even imprisoning U.S. citizens, you know, without a trial. I mean, you know, this is not a guy who will simply go away just because.
Just because he couldn't rig an election.
Yeah,
Rig the election. He'll just make it so there aren't any more elections, which is actually something we've reported on the Science page, where, you know, they may be amending it to, you know, amending the Constitution even, so that, you know, he could, you know, stay in or, I mean,
run,
you know,
for another term. Yeah,
you know, these are not the type of people, you know, the pathocrats, the psychopathic types are not the type who are just going to say, "Oh, well, okay, you know, my time is up. Let's just, you know, retire and ride around in our yachts. And
no, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better, if it ever gets better. So we discussed a little bit earlier on about Iraq, and we mentioned that at the minute, basically, it's the Americans overwhelmingly that are in Iraq, and they would be on their own if it wasn't for the British. The British government, headed by Commander-in-Chief, or whatever his name is, Prime Minister Tony Blair, seemed to be following a very similar course to the US, particularly in terms of the whole terrorism threat, the manufactured terrorism threat. In the past year, Blair has pushed through quite a lot of laws around terrorism and preventing phony terrorism. Obviously, a lot of it came out of the London bombings, which, as we have noted, were very clearly an inside job. One of the laws that have been passed, actually, is a law stating that you're not allowed to protest within 1 kilometre of government buildings of the Parliament in London. And a very small number of people have had a problem with this. A number of ordinary citizens have had a problem with this and tried to circumvent it in some way, or to bring attention to this ridiculous law where basically if you're not allowed to hold any kind of a demonstration. 2 people are not allowed to walk along with a sign within 1 kilometre of Parliament in the UK. A sign of any description. You're not allowed to protest anything or anybody because it's potentially a terrorist threat, or you could be a terrorist sympathiser or whatever. One guy actually tried to do this on his own, and he might have had a placard, and he was arrested, and in his pocket was a printout of an article from the UK Independent by one of their columnists who had been writing a series of articles on Blair's anti-terror laws and how they were essentially bringing in a police state. And the police found this and identified this as politically motivated or politically related material, and that this they told him quite clearly that this was an infringement to have this piece of paper, to have this this article talking about politics in a negative light, or talking negatively about Tony Blair. And he was arrested for that, and he was ultimately released, but I think he spent a night or two in prison and was given a caution, and I think he hasn't actually come up before the court yet. So this is the way the UK is going, or is already there. Another notable event in the past few months was what has become known as the Forest Gate raid, where at 4 o'clock in the morning on the 2nd of June, that's last month, 250 heavily armed police descended on a house where it was alleged that Muslim terrorists were manufacturing chemical weapons to unleash on innocent Londoners. In the course of the pre-dawn raid, 23-year-old Muhammad Abdul Kahar was shot. He and his brother, 20-year-old Abdul, were arrested and subjected to 3 days intensive interrogation, after which both men were freed without charge. No evidence of chemical weapons or indeed illegal activity or suspicious activity of any kind was found. There was a press conference after the release where the two young guys appeared, and they described their ordeal. And this is what happened. Kahar, this is one of the two brothers, said that he heard the front door being smashed down. This is at 4 a.m. in the morning. And he assumed it was a burglary and left his room to come down the stairs, where at a distance of about 2 or 3 feet, he met a heavily armed policeman who, on seeing him, shot him without identifying himself or without giving him any warning from about 2 or 3 feet away. Kahar said, we had eye contact and he shot me straight away. The bullet entered his chest and exited through his shoulder, sparing his life by just inches. Kahar said, I was begging him, please, please, I can't breathe. And he just kicked me in my face and kept on saying, shut the f up. And then one of the officers slapped him in the face. And this guy was obviously quite afraid of what was happening. He thought they were going to shoot him again, or that they were going to start shooting his brother and his sister, who was in the house also, and also their elderly mother. The elderly mother was dragged out of the house in handcuffs. And her sister told the BBC that she heard doors being smashed, windows being broken. She woke up, opened her door, and saw a person dressed all in black with a gun pointing at her. Meanwhile, the police raided. This is 250 police. Meanwhile, the heavily armed policemen raided the house next door, where residents received similar rough treatment. The interesting thing about this is that it kind of mirrors what happened not long after the London bombings last year, when Charles de Menezes was shot. This was a Brazilian guy living in London, working as an electrician. He was shot 8 times in the head on the floor of a tube train in London by several armed policemen. They had chased him into the train and pushed him down on the floor and just summarily executed him, shooting him 8 times in the head. You all probably remember this. After that event, the police lied about it, and it came out that the UK police, and it was a lie from the very top.
They said he was wearing a heavy winter coat when he wasn't.
They made up all sorts of stuff that he ran from them, that he was wearing a heavy coat which could have been covering up a bomb. All of this was claimed by the police in the immediate aftermath when they knew that it was wrong. And this guy was completely innocent, and there has been as yet no explanation as to why they did what they did. Now, the point I wanted to make here is that these lies that come out afterwards, because in the aftermath of this Forest Gate raid that I just described, where the guy was shot, he didn't actually die. He survived. But after these 250 heavily armed policemen broke into their house and shot one of them and dragged their mother out and beat them and interrogated them for 3 days, afterwards the police attempted to smear the victims in a similar way as they did to Charles de Menezes last year. First of all, they said that Cahar, the guy they shot, they said that he struggled with the officers rather than just being shot at point-blank range for no reason. And then they said that he'd actually been shot by his brother during the scuffle. They said it was his brother shot him, it wasn't us. And then when that didn't fly, they said that a police officer had accidentally discharged his gun because he was wearing thick gloves. So they sent out, you know, these crack UK policemen who couldn't handle their guns. Couldn't handle their guns because they were wearing thick gloves. And then they also tried to obviously smear them as militant Islamic, you know, activists, whatever. And this was not the case at all. They had no relationship whatsoever with anything of that nature. And obviously the police knew that they were lying about this. And these lies came from, in the same way as with Charles de Menezes, these lies came from the chief of the London police, his surname's Blair, this guy who is a barefaced liar and psychopath. It came out afterwards as well that this massive kind of police operation, 250 policemen at 4 a.m. in the morning breaking into someone's house and shooting them, was based on an uncorroborated tip-off from a single informant who was a young man serving a prison sentence and who had a reported IQ of 69. So this guy was in prison, he had an IQ of 69, and they made him some kind of a deal or said, listen, if you can give us any information. So the guy just made something up, just fingered someone, and they surely must have known.
Sounds like the kind of intelligence they were getting about Iraq.
Yeah, they surely must have known that this guy was, you know, feeding them a line, basically, and would say anything to get off or to get out early. But they went ahead with it anyway. And this kind of operation with 250 policemen and a dawn raid, it doesn't just happen without planning and thought and deliberate, a conscious decision to do it based on all the intelligence. And in that situation, they surely knew that this was probably not, this information they were getting was probably not worth the paper it was written on. But they went ahead anyway. And the point here is that they went ahead anyway because the real reason for this had nothing to do with any real attempt to find terrorists or to protect the British public from Islamic terrorism. It was to scare the British public, to create the appearance and the reality, again, creating reality, a fake reality of Islamic terrorism. Because if 250 officers go and raid a house because they think there's a chemical bomb, or they've been told there's a chemical bomb, and it's spread all over the papers, then that's very effective in creating the appearance and perpetuating this idea that Islamic terrorism actually exists when it doesn't. That was the point of this operation.
Fear. And what is fear useful for? For controlling populations. We see it happening around the world since 9/11. The fear factor has been ratcheted up in the United States, in Europe, all over the world. You are being controlled through this fear. And if you don't understand that, you'll never be able to overcome that fear. And you'll never be able to fight back and say, no, we don't want the lies anymore. We don't accept the lies anymore. We want truth.
So all of that brings us quite appropriately or quite topically to a movie we watched, 6 weeks ago, a couple of months ago, V for Vendetta. If anybody hasn't seen it, you should watch it.
We heard from one of our readers recently that it disappeared very, very quickly from the screens in the UK. we're not surprised.
They ran it for one night or something, you know. But it's a really good movie, and it touches on all of the things that we've just been describing. The guys who made it obviously were clued in some way as to what was actually happening, and they were trying to portray this and to get this message across to the people through film and through this, you know, fantasy or fiction story. But the fact is that a lot of it is very, very true about the UK and the US at the minute. On the UK, Jack Straw. You know who Jack Straw is? Jack Straw is the foreign minister.
Former foreign minister.
Under Tony Blair. And he was Tony Blair's right-hand man. He was there on Iraq and on Iran, and he seemed to know the drill. He was playing the game.
He was the last straw.
Yeah, he was very good, Henry. And the thing is that Jack Straw is no longer there. Jack Straw is no longer there. Jack Straw, about a month ago, was removed from his post as foreign minister. And I think the environment minister was very shocked to realise that she was going to take his place. The reason... No one said the reason. No one told us, or there was no reason given as to why. It was just a reshuffle. No one told us why Jack Straw was booted out from the foreign ministry. But I looked, and over the past few months, before his ousting, Jack Straw said two things at two separate occasions.
What were they, Joe?
One thing he said was that he does not see... When asked about Iran, he said he does not see there ever being a situation where a military intervention or an armed conflict could ever occur between Western countries, America, Britain,
in the sense that it wouldn't be justifiable.
That it simply was not something that he saw as possible, that was reasonable, or that was a thing to consider. That was one thing he said. The other thing he said, again talking about Iran, he said, we need to deal with Iran's nuclear ambitions in some way. And he said, and that can be achieved through diplomacy. And he said, once we do that, then we will move on to dealing with Israel's nuclear capabilities.
Oh, bad move, Jack.
This is what he said.
Bad move. Bad career move.
Within a month, he was gone. Now, this isn't the Israeli government. This is the British government, the foreign minister, who said that something needed to be done about Israel's 200 nuclear weapons. And he said that they were going to move, that he was planning, that his policy was to move on dealing with that and removing that threat. Within a month, he was gone. Now, you explain to me. Talk about Israeli lobby, whatever. But someone explain to me how that happens.
So the interesting thing about this movie, V for Vendetta, is that, well, I kind of don't want to ruin it if you haven't seen it, but it's going to be kind of hard not to give a few things away. So there's a scene in the movie where a police inspector who begins his investigation of a biological attack that occurred that was the beginning of the police state that is sort of the centerpiece of the movie. And... he begins in this one scene. He asks his partner the question, what would you do if you discovered that what we've been told about this biological attack was in fact false, and what would you do if you discovered that it was in reality the government who did it, and then who provided the vaccine as a solution and as a way to get themselves into power and to seize control. This obviously quite clearly is a very interesting parallel to 9/11, where there is some rather dramatic evidence that indicates that it was an inside job. It was conducted by members of the Bush administration as well as Mossad, most likely other parts of the military, intelligence agencies like the CIA, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why the movie, I think, is so interesting, and it also sort of highlights there's one character who is particularly psychopathic, one of the bigwigs in the fascist government.
It's not at all a film about the future. It's a film about what is happening here and now in a veiled way. Although in the film, the outright fascist character of the government is not screened at all. We are actually living that today in the UK, in the United States.
That was one of the interesting parts about it, was that they actually had a little scene. It was sort of like a series of flashbacks where they were talking about how, you know, we had these words that were sort of brought to our attention, like, you know, rendition and, you know, all these. It was basically, they were sort of highlighting how it was all these little steps that were taken, you know, just little by little. And, you know, the frog in water, the water becomes hotter and hotter, just a degree at a time. And then before you know it, the water's boiling. And, you know, that sort of parallels, you know, all the things that we've been talking about tonight. And in before we recorded the podcast, I looked at the July 6th science page from exactly 1 year ago. And on that page, we had a lovely little introduction. And we wrote that we've asked readers several times to try and remember what life was like prior to 9/11, when the Great War on Terror was unleashed through a vicious attack on the United States by members of its own government. While many people are still unable to wrap their heads around that one, and we admit that it's a leap for some people to go from unquestioning faith in one's elected leaders to realizing what a gang of murderers and psychopaths they really are, it is a bit easier to look objectively at how we lived our lives, at our preoccupations, at how easy it was to travel, and compare our recollections with the state of things today. It is often said that the public has no memory and can't remember what Bush may have said a year or two ago, or even a week ago. Remember his flip-flops on how important it was or wasn't to bring in Osama, dead or alive? And of course, we see that, you know, that basically is continuing to this day. That is why our archives and the archives of other sites are so important. One can then return and follow stories over time. And then later on that day's page, July 6, 2005, we also wrote, "Yet while a cursory glance at the headlines may lead us to think we are in a time warp, it is changing. It's getting worse. The incremental descent is effective because each step is so small that one loses the sense of the cumulative change. Rights and liberties are given up one at a time. The deaths in Iraq are regular but manageable, quote-unquote, in bureaucrat speak. In Palestine, a few Palestinians die each day, a few houses are destroyed, a few olive groves destroyed. Nothing so outrageous that it'll make the headlines in the U.S., and yet an entire people are being slaughtered." And of course, today we see that, in fact, this small series of steps, in the case of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, this small series of steps that's been happening for years and decades even, has now culminated in Israel, you know, what amounts to a full-scale invasion, and it's beginning to play out. And that appears to be where all the other things we discussed tonight are heading.
And even though it's much more drastic than it was, there's still no discussion of what is really going on in the American media.
And so that's why we think it's unbelievably important for everyone to discuss these topics, to, you know, do your own research. I mean, don't believe us because we said it, you know, dig on your own, you know, dig up all the facts you can, and to really inform yourself and inform those you love, and really try and spread the word and spread the truth and find out what's going on. Because, you know, there in V for Vendetta, there was this guy, V, and he was sort of like this, you know, kind of genetically mutated Superman, you know, who came along and he was the one who saved the people. Well, you know, that's a movie, but in real life, there's not going to be any genetically mutated Superman who comes along and saves us all from, you know, from Bush or Blair, or it's not going to happen. You know, if anyone is to save any of us, it's going to be us, basically. We are all we have.
That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to discuss what we've talked about this week, you're welcome to come to the Signs of the Times Forum. You can find a link to it on the Signs page. That's at www.signs-of-the-times.org. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.